Hello and welcome to episode 1283 of The Sleeper in the Bus. It is Monday, April 15th, Jackie Robinson Day and Tax Day. One good, one bad there. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined as always by Justin Mason. Justin, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. I have like two firsts today, which is pretty interesting. Like,
let's hear.
First time ever that I've remembered it's Patriots Day.
Yes.
In
yes.
20 something years of playing fantasy baseball, I actually had my lineup set.
It's been probably the bane of your existence multiple times.
I fucking hate Patriots Day. If you're watching on the YouTube,
especially like, on the
you
West
see
Coast
the sign too. Behind. Yeah, because it's like it starts at 8:10 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, and like, I was like, all right, you know what? And my kids don't have school today. So I was like, I'm sleeping in. Like,
weirdly,
I'm not setting an alarm or, yeah, for no apparent reason. So I had my lineup set for all the, you know, Red Sox and Guardians and stuff and for those leagues that lock. No league should lock every single game.
No, and shouts to Jeff Erickson and Scott Janstead. I'll use Scott's quote. We have the technology for that to never have to be the case.
Yeah.
So no league should have to lock at that point. I completely agree with that. Only Guardians and Red Sox should lock. Give me a break on that, especially with this game being as crazy early as it is. But I do like, you know, the morning baseball. Like, watching it is fun, enjoying it is fun, and it's not a bad time. In the in the best time zone, the central time zone, but man, 8 a.m. on the West Coast, that's that's tough.
Yeah,
6-0 win for the guards, man. They went out there and stomped them. Crutter Crawford again screwed by his bullpen.
Yeah,
my man is not 0-3. He hadn't taken any L's, but he's 0-0 with a 0.42 ERA.
Yeah. It's
unbelievable. Allowed 2 hits and 5 2/3, no walks this time. Grinded it out a bit against Baltimore, where he put on some base runners, had to work out of some jams. Was just downright awesome in this one. He's been wonderful for 4 starts, and he's now 0-0. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But we got lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about some weekend.
Oh, I was going to say the other thing.
Oh, yeah, your other first.
My other first, I am not getting my taxes in on time.
That's your first?
First time ever not getting my taxes in on time.
Well, that's a good track record then. You're almost,
yeah,
like,
right?
You know,
I'm sure the IRS will cut me some slack, right?
Oh, yeah, they're usually pretty chill about that. And yeah, it's such a cool system that we have where you have to figure it out. And if you're off by a penny, you're screwed. Like, that's totally cool. It's not stupid. We're not the only country that does this dumbass way of doing it, but okay. End rant there. So, we're going to talk some weekend standout arms, kind of see what's up with them, where you're at. Actually, one of them got some news or at least I saw it as we were kind of warming up here. So the news on him would be to sit tight. And then some early breakthrough bats. I kind of want to see where you're at with them. Some names that we've, you know, been around the block with before. Some new names emerging. The hottest guy in baseball. Got to figure out, you know, what do we see the rest of the way? We know Colton Cowser was amazing, but where are we at? So let's
start. I thought you were talking about Michael Busch.
Hey, could have been either or. You know, he could have been the guy that I said we've been around the block with because we've been waiting for him, and he popped off.
And he 4 homers in the last 4 games. I mean,
unreal stuff. I love it, too. And it's one of those things where it's like it totally helped the Cubs, and it certainly didn't hurt the Dodgers, right? They could afford to move a guy like that, and they are unaffected, you know, because he was just surplus, just a badass bat extra over here. Have you seen our new player rater?
I have not.
New player rater on the page. Go to fangraphs.com. Mouse over to the fantasy tab there. Go down second one below the expert rankings. Player rater. Bang. Check it out. You got the ADP there with the roster rate, start rate, plate appearances, average runs, ribbies, stolen base, homers, dollar amount in the auction calculator. And then click on that little card bit there. Pops up a fancy little card that you can mess with some other stuff. It's quite fantastic. I'm pretty excited by it.
Awesome.
The tech team did a great job with it there.
I'm going to play around with that later.
Yeah. Get in there, take a look at it. And it was also very helpful in finding some of these early breakthrough bats because I could kind of look at the ADP, who's got a big number at ADP and a big number in the dollars earned, and let's see where we're at. But we're going to start with the breakout pitchers over the weekend or at least the standout arms because I want to see what you're doing with these guys. Some of these guys are intriguing arms for sure, but I'm maybe a little tepid on them. I want to start with the first guy who really fits that. I want this guy to be great. I want his righty cohort teammate, Hunter Green, to be great too. We're talking about Nick Lodolo. I want them to be a dominant lefty-righty 1-2 punch for the Reds, but I don't trust it. I will remain skeptical probably until they put up like a full season's worth. And even then, I'll be like, well, what was their home run to fly ball rate? Oh, 2%. Well, that's going to regress. But we did see a nice dominant outing from Nick Lodolo. It was against the White Sox. Keep that in mind. It was in Chicago, which is not quite as friendly as Coors Light in Cincinnati. But it's a friendly park. Terrible lineup, though. And I don't care. I don't really like to discount guys for beating up crummy lineups. You beat who you beat. They all count the same in fantasy stats. One hit in 5 2/3, one walk, 10 punchies, really cut up that ugly White Sox team, did Nick Lodolo. Back from injury, where are we at? Is Nick Lodolo a must-add everywhere?
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, there's just going to be rocky moments because he pitches in Cincinnati. I mean, you look at even just, obviously we only have one start to go off of, but like I said, he was dominant in it. But he also had like a 29% ground ball rate. He put 50% of the balls in the air. And that, to me, is scary when you start talking about the summer in Cincinnati.
So does Green, by the way. They're both fly ball guys. They're these, you know, they're high heat in the top of the zone there. You know, the guys are going to be able to lift it a bit. Usually they get under it, make a lot of outs, but when they connect, you know, the old classic, the pitcher supplies the power, at least with Hunter Green, who throws like 100, and Lodolo, you know, he throws mid-90s, but that's my big fear there, Justin, with Nick Lodolo. Now, he's 42% rostered at Fantasy Pros, which is ESPN, Yahoo, and I think, did you say CBS is also factored in there? Or did we figure that out?
I don't know.
But either way, it's a composite rating, 42%. Let's see what Lodolo has this week. He's got Philly at home. Where are you starting Lodolo off of that?
I think I'm starting him everywhere.
Kind of want to see where it's at.
Yeah.
I think you got him, you kind of have.
I don't know how you sit him. I know Philadelphia's got a really strong lineup and it is all a really tough part, but like, I don't know how after he goes out and throws a 10 strikeout performance, even against the White Sox, like, like, I don't know how you sit him. Like, I have him, I think, in just like one league, and he's in my lineup. Like,
I would envy your pitching if it's good enough to be able to sit him. I will say that because Lodolo.
And as I learn my lesson, bragging about my pitching,
you deserve that shit
on Friday, and then they go out and just get hammered on Friday, where my ERA jumps up like a full freaking point.
But to what? Tell them what to what.
It's like 3.04 or something.
It's
like
still
that.
Wonderful. It's like, so that you had a lot of wiggle room. It's just funny that it happened right away when I told you were tempted.
It was literally that night, like, you know, Brandon Fott gets lit up versus the Cardinals, and I can't remember who else got lit up, but I just don't know how you don't start Lodolo right now.
Yeah, run with Lodolo. Let me ask you about Green real quick. Just a quick pivot over to Green. Philly and at Texas. I'm not even worried about the two-step. What?
Nope.
No, you have to. That's the thing. If you drafted him, how can you sit Green? I think you have to ride everything, especially a two-step. I understand the fear. Philly and at Texas, but can you ever really get Hunter Green out of the lineup if you paid the premium for him?
Probably not. Like, you need those strikeouts because you've accounted for them. So.
Exactly. So I think you gotta run him there, and that's my fear. And
you know, the crazy part is right now his home run rate's fine.
I know.
Like, it's not the home run rate. He's just giving up too many hits overall.
Which should hopefully come down. You know, his walk rate's actually pretty good at 8% for Hunter Green.
His xCRA is 2.53.
Yeah, like, things are going well. Yeah. Can he maintain this 11% homer to fly ball? That we could live with. That's a 1-1 homer 9 right now. That would be great. That's what I don't know. So I love both these guys, but I root for them from afar. I don't have either on rosters, Nick Lodolo nor Hunter Green, but I do hope they do well just because I want the rest to be good. They're a fun team. They need some pitching to go with all that wonderful
hitting. And we love Jenny Butler and Jeff Erickson.
Jenny Butler, Jeff Erickson, two big Reds fans in our industry. So we are pulling for the Reds. And it doesn't hurt either of our teams as Giants and Tigers fans. We can afford for them to be great, and it doesn't impact our ball clubs. What about Jose Buto? Not Butto. Be funnier if it was Butto, but it is Buto. They said he's staying in the rotation, and why not? Two spot starts, one on a doubleheader against my Tigers, and then this weekend popped off against, who did he pop off against? The Royals, the hot hitting Royals. He slowed them down. Now he has 12 innings of one earned run ball, five hits, four walks, 15 Ks, nine of those Ks coming up against those hard hitting Royals. Buto looked wonderful. Like I said, they're sticking with him. They need him. You know, they need some things to emerge within this rotation if the Mets are really going to do some things. Tough part is you run out, you get Buto, and he gets at the Dodgers. Yeah. I imagine you're trying to sit him. Were you after him on the waiver wire? Were you looking to pick him up and sit type of deal? Would you maybe start off of these two great starts? Where are you at on Jose Buto?
So he was in my waterfall, but not one of my top targets. I was mostly going after Kirby Yates and Jeff Hoffman this week.
And getting them.
And getting them in a number of places. So, except for where I was against Jeff Zimmerman. So,
my man loves Kirby Yates.
Yeah,
he loves Jeff Yates.
Yeah. If you look at his changeup and his slider, they are beautiful. Pitches.
They are beautiful. You know, well done.
But if something is it is his fastball. His fastball's awesome.
Yes. His fastball is butt-oh.
If he can continue to rely on like the two secondary offerings and kind of make them more of primary offerings as opposed to the fastball, like, then I think he could have success. But we've seen obviously he was great in spring training. He was great in Triple A before he got called up, and he's been great since he got called up. When he wasn't great prior to this season, it was because that fastball just gets hit around the yard. Yes. And I do worry that there are going to be outings where the changeup isn't there, and the changeup is the better of the two secondary pitches, that he's going to struggle and he's going to get hit around. So, like, I think you should pick him up in most formats. I would not start him against the Dodgers, but also I'm not starting anybody who's not like a top 40 starter against the Dodgers.
Higher. 25, man. 20. Like, I don't want any piece of the Dodgers or the Braves if I can avoid it. If it's part of a two-step that I really got to get the second piece of, you know, if I just don't have anything
like, because I regret of injuries. Not starting Bailey Ober versus the Dodgers. And, you know, and then I can't remember who we went up against.
Detroit. That's why
half.
I started him. And that's the kind of thing. It's like, if you get Detroit.
But at the same time, I also, like, there's a reason why I didn't. I'm just that afraid of the Dodgers right now.
Yeah, you can't go broke fading the Dodgers. That is one thing for sure. Ober gets Detroit again this weekend, so you get to run it back with him there, and he gets the White Sox. But Buto, after this, we don't know exactly who he's against. RotoWire is projecting that maybe he comes out of the rotation. Again, management said no. So I even if Tyler McGill is ready to come back, maybe Adrian Hauser needs to be looking over his shoulder. Because if Buto, now if he goes out and stands tall against the Dodgers, well, then he's really securing himself. But even if he just kind of gets touched up a little bit, maybe like a five inning, three earned, 4 or 5 K type of deal, you know, decent outing that kind of keeps him in the game. I don't think he's coming out. McGill himself can even just go to the bullpen. I don't think McGill has to come in.
I think Hauser makes a lot of sense. Hauser's pitched out of the bullpen in Milwaukee. Like, I think
he's always been, swingman type. So I think he could easily be the guy. But right now, Buto's in, and I think he's somebody you want to take a look at. Should still have a lot of availability in the shallower formats. You don't need to rush out because it is the Dodgers this week. And if somebody takes him out from under you or whatever, and then they cut him after the Dodgers, then you can pick him up after that too. So if you missed out and you think somebody might try to pull a fast one by getting him right away, they're not going to start him this week, or if they do, they might regret it. And so maybe,
like, I don't think I put a bid in on Buto in Tout Wars, where like they have a rule where you have to start him. And like, I wasn't gonna do that. So
I totally agree with that, because you don't want to be forced to
torture
if you don't have to. Yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to either. I had him lower in a waterfall there in a list of bids. I did not get him. He went big in my league. 83 in the one main, and then was he? Oh wow, Jeff got him last week for $6 in my other main. Shouts to Jeff on that one. Well, that's why he had extra money to go 175 on Kirby Yates, because he saved so much money.
He only went for $59 in my main.
59 is not bad. I still wouldn't have gotten him though. I was in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, what about 40 something?
Your boy coming back around. What? Now you weren't in on Mackenzie Gore this year. You acknowledge
which makes sense that he's gonna have just an amazing year because obviously. I was in.
Obviously, it's time for him to have the year from heaven. But you know, after a couple of solid starts, Pittsburgh and Philly, he pops off in Oakland, which makes sense, right? Kind of hang, you know, hang in there, do decently enough against two quality teams, Pittsburgh and Philly. Yes, Pirates, I would say more than decent team. They're very good so far, with five earned in 11 innings of work with 12 punchies, only four walks. That's not too bad. And then, you know, bide your time until you get Oakland, and then you just go crazy, which is exactly what he did. Five scoreless with four hits and a walk, 11 strikeouts for Mackenzie Gore. Not available in 15s, you know, definitely scooped up there, but 33% roster in Fantasy Pros. So in the more public leagues, going to be available. What do we think of Mackenzie Gore? Is it time to buy back in? Would you be doing that? He's got Houston this week, the Dodgers next week. Never mind. Yeah, but what are you doing long term? Any interest in maybe stashing him? Are you afraid of Houston? I'm still pretty afraid of Houston.
Yeah, I mean, I know Houston isn't like winning a lot of games right now, but I'm still scared of them, especially when you're talking about a lefty. You know, Houston's got, you know, Jose Altuve. I used to do like a DFS article. And I used to like have an acronym for Jose Altuve. It was like we always start or always Altuve versus a lefty.
Absolutely.
Like because he just murders, you know, and Bregman hits lefties as well. And like,
even their two big lefties, Alvarez and Tucker, can hit lefties. Yeah. So you got some lefty killers like Altuve and Bregman, and then you still get Alvarez and Tucker. Yonder Diaz has emerged on the scene. We're actually going to talk about one of their other, you know, lower in the order type guys later when we talk some breakthrough hitters. But yeah, with Gore, I think it's tough to really get excited because of these next two matchups. You're really not using him. And with a guy like this who is in kind of that streamer territory in shallower formats, if you're not using him, what's really the point of picking him up? I understand getting him in a 15 where he was available. Anywhere where he's available, go ahead and get him, stash him for now, see what's up. But in a 10 or 12, I don't know, man. Maybe watch list. If you got the open spot, maybe if you can ride it for 2 weeks, but you're literally not using him against Houston or the Dodgers next week. So I don't know that it's that great. You're hoping he gets pushed back a day because it's at Miami at the tail end of next week, the 426.
For me, this is like a really, I would pick him up and I just wouldn't use him in these starts. Mm-hmm. But there are some interesting things on the profile. The four seam fastball.
You're talking?
Yeah, with Gore. Like the four seam fastball is up like a tick and a half. And with that kind of increased velocity, his whiff rate's gone up 9% on that pitch.
That's so fantastic.
Like, there are some signs that, hey, things are getting better for him. There's also some signs that, okay, maybe this is just like, this is more about the hitters that he's facing. He's going up against teams that are swinging outside the zone more because he's not attacking the zone. So like you think, oh, hey, he's getting more swings and misses on this fastball. He must be attacking hitters. He's not. His zone percentage has dropped 3%. To like 37%, where the league average around 42%. And he's just getting a few more swings outside of the zone. This is something I want to monitor, though, because maybe he's getting that because his stuff is, you know, harder to read with increased velocity coming from the left-hand side. So definitely something I want to monitor a little bit and watch a little bit more at Mackenzie Gore's starts. I kind of dismissed the first, you know, couple. And I don't want to, like, overrate Oakland, you know, going up
exactly
against Oakland. But I also don't want to dismiss Gore because he's been bad in the past and he's, you know, on a bad team, which I think is easy to do, and maybe the reason I haven't given as much credence as maybe I should, because this is a guy that I've loved in the past. This is, like, you mentioned, like, I've been a big Mackenzie Gore fan. I've always thought he had the talent to do this kind of stuff, so like I shouldn't allow my past trauma with him to influence my decisions on his future.
Exactly. And he's still just 25 years old. Like, there's still legitimate upside here that that could send Mackenzie Gore sky high. Like, there could be a breakout on the horizon here, especially if the walk rate stays in check. That could be massive.
And so far, so good.
so far so good on that front. And if he keeps that up, then we're really excited. And if he does anything against these two teams, then you obviously get exponentially more excited. Yeah. If he can handle the Astros and Dodgers, or even, like I said, survive, like I was saying with the Buto thing. If it's like five, six innings, 3-4 runs, but still a bunch of Ks and not too many walks, but they just happen to do some damage, I can live with that. There are definitely outcomes here that wouldn't be fantasy relevant that I would still be intrigued by for Mackenzie Gore. So we're keeping total tabs on
him. If the strikeouts and walks are there and the velocity sticks around, like, I'm going to feel, treat some of these, like, these two outings like spring training. Like, yes. I don't really care what the results say as long as the strikes and the walks are in good shape once you get
totally that agree. Way. Totally agree. Big outing this weekend for Max Meyer. Six innings of one run ball on six hits, no walks, seven Ks against Atlanta to get his second win in a row, back to back six inning, one run outings. And he was rewarded with a send out. He gets sent out here, which is probably pretty shocking to a lot of folks. And I understand. At the same time, remember, we were pretty surprised that he broke camp. It definitely had to do with the fact that the injuries just ravaged their rotation kind of late in spring. Not that he wasn't deserving and that he can't be good, but we knew that there's going to have to be some massaging with his volume this year for Max Meyer. It was never just going to be like, you're up and here we go. He might go like 6-7 days between starts in AAA. They might be 3-4 inning outings. They are going to have to massage him through 6 months here. So it's unfortunate coming off of a fantastic outing against one of the most difficult teams in baseball in the Braves. And you just might have picked him up thinking, hey, I got myself a nice stud here. And instead, you got a minor leaguer. Where are you holding Max Meyer?
Probably in 15s and some 12s, depending on
what you've got.
Yeah, I think it just depends on what you have. I've got a number of leagues where I'm holding guys already. Like, can you afford to hold? Now, I dropped Eduardo Rodriguez this week, right? He had a setback. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think I'd rather hold Max Meyer than Eduardo Rodriguez.
I agree.
There's no one on this in this rotation right now outside of Jesus Luzardo, who's actually been like one of their worst pitchers.
I was going to say, I knew you're going to say who's locked in, but even he's not going anywhere.
He's not pitching well at all, but he's probably the only guy in this rotation who's locked into a spot right now. So mm-hmm. I think Meyer will be back. I think this is all about workload management and, hey, you're pitching great. We want to make sure we're managing you well coming off of Tommy John, but you'll be back. And so the problem is we just don't know when. We don't know. Yeah, we have no exactly. idea. Like, he could be down for a month. And like, can you afford to hold on to him in a 10 team or 12 team league for a month?
Tough.
It's very, very difficult. But I would try because I think the upside is that great. Like,
yes.
I accidentally left him in a lineup.
And
was all like, when I realized like it happened, I was like, oh no,
I'm dead.
No,
going against Atlanta, I'm so dead.
To set 23 lineups every week, like, you're gonna make mistakes every once in a while, and I was like, oh god, this is gonna be really bad. But thank god I did.
You need an intern.
I do.
You need to hire an intern.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anybody looking
for an unpaid position and setting my lineups,
hang on to Max Meyer as long as you can. But push come to shove, you might have to move on. Now, I know some leagues like on Yahoo play with that NA slot, which is basically like a single prospect. Mm-hmm. If you don't have anybody there, then of course he can take that spot for a while. Like, do what you can to hold him, but don't get silly with it.
Yeah.
And I know that that's a different line for everybody. So I know it's a little vague, which, hey, when the push comes to shove, if you want to ask us a question in one of our chats or on Twitter or something,
yeah,
I'll gladly give you the answer since I know that this is a bit nebulous, but I can't give you a list of all the players I would hold him for or whatever because it all is just team dependent.
I did have someone ask me last year, and maybe we should just incorporate this into like an episode where we just play like a drop game, like just like talk about who we would drop right now.
I kind of did the opposite at the front end of the SP chart today. And I was going to do exactly that. Say, here's who I'm cutting. Instead, I said, here's pitchers drafted 150 to 250 in the main that I'm holding through the storm. Mitch Keller, Ryan mm-hmm. Pepiot, Luis Severino, Kenta Maeda, and Griffin Canning. Maybe today I will do who I'm dropping. Cause here's the thing. I will say this. There's nobody inside the top 150 that I'm dropping that isn't injury related.
In a 15.
In a 15, yes.
Yeah.
There aren't many in a 12 though either.
Yeah.
There aren't. I picked these guys for a reason. I want to see more than 3-4 starts. So if I'm looking, you know, let me see if I can find a name that really jumps out where it's like, oh, you sure you wouldn't cut him? I mean, in the top 150, there aren't that many underperformers as you're looking through it. Like, you're not moving off Rodon. No. Oh, 10s and 12s, Hunter Brown.
Yeah. I told someone last week to drop Hunter Brown. Like,
I am open to it. I'm trying to hold him, but if you don't have anybody else, I get it.
Because his schedule is so rough for the next
that's exactly
weeks.
Why we said that.
I have no problem dropping him.
Cubs and at Colorado. Yeah. I believe it was.
And the Dodgers.
Atlanta, then at Cubs, at Colorado.
You're not going to use them like in a 10 team league or 12 team league. Like, you need people you're going to use.
Exactly. So, but there aren't too many other ones, but maybe I should do the opposite today. 150 to 250 guys that I am cutting, because like I said, I want to try to keep these guys that I had some love for and really thought they could break out, but you can't hold too long, especially in 10s and 12s. And I've talked before that is one of my weaknesses.
You don't want to put yourself behind the eight ball.
You know? And you don't want to miss out on the potential Mackenzie Gores. Like, if he is breaking out, then you want to jump in.
Somebody dropped Garrett Whitlock in a league of mine. I was like, oh, I'm scooping that. Like, you know, like, you know, fine. I'll drop a guy like Hunter Brown for Garrett Whitlock. No problem.
Absolutely. I am surprised that somebody, I mean, even just going off the surface, 126 ERA, why? I don't know. That's kind of crazy to me. All right. So Max Meyer sent out Yariel Rodriguez for Toronto. You know, he's a guy that got from Cuba by way of Japan, I believe. Is that the correct?
I believe that is.
Yeah. He is a Cuban player, but he was out in Japan pitching. Took last year off entirely after a really good relief season in 2022. He's 27 years old. Interesting kind of swingman hybrid type. We don't really know. Is he like a 3 to 5 inning guy? Can he eventually play up into 5-6 inning appearances? I don't know. But he had 3 2/3 this weekend that went pretty well with 6 strikeouts, 2 walks, 1 run, and 4 hits. And it was against Colorado. So again, another one of those ones where, okay, you know, not the biggest competition, but this is also a guy making his major league debut. So I'm not going to take that away
from him. And he wasn't supposed to pitch.
Yeah, he was thrust into the fire.
He only came in because Francis Bowden just got torched.
Bowden Francis, that's another Colt Keith.
We need to make a team of Francis, guys.
Yeah, of reverse name guys. I love it. Yeah, you got a lot of those. I'm trying to think of others right now. But no, it was Bowden Francis. So it looks like he is going to take Francis's spot, it seems like. I don't know for sure. It would line up for at San Diego, at KC. It might only be 3-4 innings here early on, but what were you doing with Yariel Rodriguez? Let's focus on the deeper leagues. I think right now in 12s, he's still kind of like, maybe if you have an extra spot, I'm not really running out to get him in the shallower leagues. But I was interested in the 15s. What about you with Yariel Rodriguez of the Jays?
I got him in Tout Wars. I probably spent too much money.
How much?
And it's $69.
Nice.
Nice, yeah.
But you got a G. No. You got a G in that league, right? You got a $1,000 bid, right?
Yeah. Plus $0 bids. Yeah.
Okay. Then so, I'm more okay with it there, especially with the zeros.
People are much less aggressive halfway through the season there than in other leagues. So, like, you know,
so
like,
you,
I'm not
you'll be aggressive early, and then you can downshift late. And get guys cheap. So that's fine with that. So with Rodriguez, are you putting him now? You have to put him in this week, like you said. You must.
He's
so
going in for San Diego, which scares the crap out of me. But
it's not easy.
I was willing to take the gamble on Rodriguez. I really like this stuff. The question is, how well can he control it? Yep. You know, walks have been a real issue for him. But his command is pretty good. When he does hit the zone, he puts it usually where he wants it, gets a lot of strikeouts. Toronto is a good team where I think he can get a lot of wins, especially if he can build himself up to being a five-inning guy. I think the real question is, can he control the walks, and can he be a five-inning guy this year?
Yes. Yes. That's my biggest question is, what are we going to get with the innings from Yariel Rodriguez? But you got to take a shot on a live arm like this. in our 15 teamers, you know, the wire has been filled with like crusty old guys that, you know, they're kind of guys that I actually like, to be honest. You know, I get in on the Wade Miley's of the world because they can be serviceable, the Kyle Gibsons, but they can also hit you. We know they can hit you too. So there's definitely risk. But anytime there's a live upside arm like this, that's why I went in for Jose Soriano. He didn't do that well in his start, but he had good strikeouts, walks. He throws 100 for the Angels. So I took a shot because you don't find many super live arms that have like legitimate upside. That's why Mackenzie Gore is so appealing. So with Yariel Rodriguez, I am interested. Again, in a 12, I might look at it. In a 10, I think it's still, there's still going to be a lot of other names that I would be more interested in. For example, the aforementioned Mackenzie Gore is 33%. I think I'd rather just go for, well,
yeah,
maybe,
but you can't use them for the next two starts.
Yeah,
like that's
maybe not with those matchups. But for example, your boy Ranger Suarez is 41% rostered. He might not have as much upside as Yariel Rodriguez, but I think I'd go for Suarez in a 10 teamer over Yariel. But I do like him. Keep him on your watch list.
Especially because Suarez has Colorado in Philadelphia this week.
Yes. So you're absolutely using him, whereas you mentioned Yariel has a trip to San Diego.
But you might drop, if you do have like Fab during the week or, you know, waiver wire pickups during the week, you can use Suarez right here, drop him because he's going to Cincinnati. You don't want that after that.
Pick up Yariel.
And then go pick up Yariel. Yeah.
Just keep whatever you do. If it's not ready to pick up, depending on your league size, at least put him on your watch list. This is a guy to know. There is upside. They paid him some real money for a guy who didn't pitch for a whole year. You know, and he's not like a baby. He's 27. They think they might have something here. I tend to agree. I got him in a couple DCs as well. Yariel Rodriguez. Here's one I put on just to kind of test, see where you're at with him. And shouts to my boy Greg. You know, I got to get my Bob Sacamano-esque mention of him every episode. He kind of threw him on my radar. This was a guy I used to like back in the day when he was a prospect with Atlanta, second round pick. Kyle Muller. He's out in Oakland now. Do you remember last year that he had like he pitched the season debut? 5 innings, 1 run, and everyone started going bananas for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was a big hot pickup. I might have even gotten that second start in too. He 5 2/3, 2 runs against Cleveland. But either way, like he was a hot pickup early. Immediately dropped 2 6 burgers on everybody and, you know, quickly fell apart. Right now, he's in the bullpen doing multi-inning stints, but they've been pretty impressive, including a big one this weekend against Washington. 3 innings of 1 run ball with 2 hits, no walks, 5 Ks. He has just 2 walks in 13 and a third with 6 hits allowed, 3 runs, 14 strikeouts. He's 26 years old. You know he's going to get a shot starting at some point because it's Oakland, right? They're going to need somebody. Is Kyle Muller someone that you're putting on your watch list at all?
Maybe in a 15, but...
Specifically in a 15. I don't think unless he like breaks out and like really pushes through, I don't think we're talking 12s and lower, but 15s where it is hard to find things. Does Kyle Muller do enough, or has he done enough right now to kind of get on your watch list to at least see what's up?
On my watch list, not necessarily on my team. There's not...
Yeah, I didn't pick him up.
Yeah, there's not much in the profile for Muller that goes, there's a massive change here or anything like that. If anything, like he's giving up around the same amount of contact in the zone and the fastball velocity is actually down. So like I wonder how much of this is just some guys are more effective coming in out of the bullpen in multi-inning.
Most roles. Guys are, right? Like you can air it out for 2 to 3 instead of trying to last 5 or 6.
Well, especially when you're like coming in, like he came in relief of Joe Boyle, like who's a flamethrower and like, you know, it's like a much different type of pitcher. So the batters are used to seeing kind of a different look and they have a hard time maybe readjusting to someone who's throwing a little bit softer with a little bit more control and command. So he may be less effective if he were a starter. This may be the way he is effective, but who knows how smart Oakland is in terms of how they would use them. So far, Oakland's doing a decent job of actually using guys really well. Mason Miller's looked great.
I think so too, yeah.
So I don't want to like, I don't want to be like, well, Oakland's stupid. The ownership is stupid. I don't know.
The ownership sucks. We like the front office, the fans. They have diehard, excellent fans. Yeah. This is all on the front office.
I'm going to go to at least one Oakland A's game this year just so I can say goodbye to the Coliseum. You know?
You should see if they're doing another boycott one and try to go to that.
If they do, I will definitely try to be there.
because those are fire. I love them. So yeah, I thought it was a good call out by Greg. It was enough to at least I used the little watch list thing. It's that little eye on the waiver list. Just got him on my list, Kyle Muller, just to see what's up. Because frankly, in a 15 teamer, even this usage might have some value. You know, it gets lean in the summer months there, where you might just take somebody who can get 8 innings in a week. You know, let's see, I guess it would have only been the 3 innings last week because he threw on the 7th, mm-hmm. which was Sunday, and then Saturday. But, you know, he can get 2 of those outings in a given week. In fact, he did the week before. So it ended up being 8 innings of 2-run ball with 7 strikeouts, 7 2/3 to be exact.
You know where I kind of like him?
Where?
You know, there are some like head-to-head leagues where you have to like start a relief pitcher.
Must have an RP,
and,
yes.
You know, and the guys that have starting pitcher eligibility but come in multiple times a week that you can kind of rotate in your lineup in a daily lineup league, like that, in a deeper version of that, like that makes sense.
Totally because agree. And
you can kind of keep them in your SP spots and rotate the other SP spots accordingly.
So you're getting innings even when your starters aren't going. It's kind of the opposite of what I believe CBS calls SPARPS, starting pitcher as relief pitcher, mm-hmm. which is the Jordan Hicks, the RP who actually starts. This is the opposite of that, a multi-inning reliever who has SP eligibility still that you can throw into that. Because a lot of those leagues use like 4 SP spots, 2 RP slots, and then 1 or 2 extra P slots. And so you can kind of maneuver different things based on whether, again, like it's a Jordan Hicks, which is a SPARP, or in this case, goes the other way, RP mm-hmm. as SP, Kyle Muller could be that guy. So I like that. It's deeper format. It's kind of niche, but that might be the best use for it.
Again, one of the things we always say, know your rules and how to
know your rules and how to maximize them. Exactly. Let's talk some hitters. Now, I meant to put this in news, so pardon me on that. So he's not an early breakthrough bat, which is what this section is, but I want to get some Tommy Pham discussion in because he is going to the White Sox. Now, he was already scooped in one of my leagues and held and not available in the other, which, by the way, I just want to point this out. Somebody, I can't remember who, so I don't know exactly who to roast. I don't think it was you, so I'm not coming at you. I believe it was.
It might have been me.
No, I think it was our heroes, Scott Jenstedt and Jeff Erickson. But I was talking about the little gambit that people run where they try to draft minor leaguers to purposely cut them to make them available. And I brought that up as something that I thought a team might have been doing with major leaguers in my league, drafting Devin Williams to cut him so that they could kind of go back to it and get him beforehand. And they, I think it was them, it might not have been, so I don't want to cast too many aspersions. They told me that it's not the same with major leaguers,
but it absolutely is.
If they're not drafted, for example, Tommy Pham is not in the pool of that league because he was not in the draft pool. Now, it depends when your league was drafted, but there's a particular cutoff. For example, Michael Lorenzen, same thing, not available. They're basically treated like prospects.
Mm.
So that's exactly what happened with Pham in one of my leagues. He's not available because he wasn't drafted and he was not in the pool. I believe that pool morphs as the draft season goes on. So I think he was available in my 323 pool, but not in my 327. So anyway, I was correct is what I'm trying to say, which happens a lot because I'm often correct. I'm kidding. I'm wrong a lot, y'all. But I just wanted to point out that
can be a gambit. If you're just listening to the podcast and seeing my face change drastically when Paul says he's greatly disagreeing with me
saying I'm always correct, which is fair. I'm definitely not always correct. I'm often wrong, but this one I was correct on. So I thought someone in my league was trying that same gambit with major leaguers, where again, what it is in the NFBC is like you could draft Dylan Cruz and then you cut him and then he kind of lurks out there on the waiver wire. And then when he's like a week or two from coming up, you could go back in our league only and get him, or any league where he was drafted and cut. And if in Justin's league he was never drafted, then you wouldn't be able to get Dylan Cruz until he debuted. So I don't think it's a great idea. And especially this team looked like they were doing it with like 5 or 6 players. So I don't recommend it for that. But maybe one player with one of like your last 3 picks. I think Dylan Cruz was kind of the one that I thought was the smartest to maybe do that with. And then just throw him back out after the first bid and then just keep tabs on him. But you are risking not getting him, of course. That means he's available to everybody. But if you pick him up 2 weeks beforehand, that's a hell of a lot cheaper than when he comes up and there's the frenzy. So anyway, Tommy Pham will be that guy in a lot of leagues this week where he's now going to only be available for the first time. He's going to play every day. He's still a badass.
He may not be available because he's signing a minor league contract. He's going to start off in the minors.
So he'll be available this week. So when he comes up, he will be available.
Yes.
Will you be interested, assuming he doesn't get hurt or anything like that? If he just goes down, crushes for a couple weeks at the minors, and then comes up for the White Sox, will you be in on the Tommy Pham, you know, triple-digit bids, which is exactly what they will be?
Oh, I don't know if I'll be in on a triple-digit bid because, I mean, he's going to play every day. He's gonna,
isn't
I mean,
he like an 18-18 potential?
I guess
God, from like whenever, if he comes up in a couple weeks, I didn't want to say 2020 because a month will have passed by then, but isn't he like, you know, 16-16, 17-17 type, high teens, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he could be, and he's going to play every day.
Going to play every day. Shit team, going to have like 14 RBIs and negative eight runs scored.
You want to play a Would You Rather with Tommy Pham real quick?
Yes.
Because I got a list right here of guys. Would you rather, some of these will be really easy, and some of these may be a little bit more difficult. Would you rather Tommy Pham or Robbie Grossman?
You mean leadoff hitter Robbie Grossman? Yeah, I'll go with hitter. Tommy Pham.
Okay. Tommy Pham or Andrew Benintendi?
You're just doing all of his teammates. I'll go Pham.
Tommy Pham or Andrew Vaughn?
God damn it. Pham. And then I'm going to go Sheets next.
You're going to do Gavin Sheets over Tommy Pham?
I don't think I would.
I think I would. And I'm doing this to say that Tommy Pham is the best fantasy player that is healthy on the White Sox.
I agree with. I do agree with that because he brings the speed component. The only reason I might go Sheets is because I don't know, man. I still love Gavin Sheets.
You just love him. That is not a rational thing. I like
correct.
Gavin Sheets. I picked up Gavin Sheets in a number of leagues over the last
But you're right.
Weeks.
It's irrational love.
Yeah, it's irrational love.
Justin.
Tommy Pham is the best player on the White Sox, and he's in the minor leagues.
Correct. That is correct. I lost Sheets 53-52.
Oh, my God.
Do you know how upset I am?
Because the $69 bid was right there staring you in the face, and you didn't do it.
That's my fault. You're right.
All right,
I try to be perfect.
There are times where like I get criticized, not from
you,
like people, not from people in the industry, but like for people who aren't in the industry, don't like the industry, whatever. Because I live stream drafts, I talk about my process a lot and stuff like that. I'm going to give away a piece of my process that will probably hurt me if people in my leagues are listening.
Okay.
When you end a bid, it should not end in one or two, unless it is at the end of the season. I bid with the last digit being three or last digit being seven.
Always threes and sevens?
Always, almost always. Now, I'll change it throughout the season because I keep track of FAB in each league and I see what people are doing.
Because I agree on, I was on zero and one not wanting to be my end bids.
So, and then what do you do in order to beat those people? You bid the two. So I bid the three to beat you.
Got it. Okay. So, because zero and one was the one I always knew.
Yeah. Some people are going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to do $55. And someone will go, well,
so now you're seven.
Six. So now I'm a seven. Because we had a conversation with Eno where he lost someone $2 to $2, right?
Yep.
You should bid three. You should bid, I mean, and this is like, and obviously as the season progresses, you can go through and you should keep track of everybody's fab bids and kind of see where where the trends are. But at the beginning of the season, especially, like if you look at all my bids from yesterday, all of my winning bids on Jeff Hoffman and Kirby Yates were $37.
I'm with it. I like that. That's savvy. Yeah, I always try to avoid the zero and one. But like you said, if I then go to two, well, then people that are thinking about that, like you, are just popping me on the three. So good call out. I love it. And that's a good piece of process. And that never do zero and five. Never. You are asking to be murked there, especially maybe if you're lower in the standings because you're going to get the ties. But I would really try to avoid the zero and the five. And then I agree with your notion of the one and the six. Then everyone's gonna be like, oh, they're not gonna do 0-5, but then you got to go 3-7. Love it.
Yep.
I'm with it all day. But anyway, I lost Gavin Sheets by a buck. That was a bummer. Tommy Pham, when he comes up, he's going to be somebody to get. And I really do think he could hit triple digits. And I think I could be find myself there. I think I would be interested. You know, depending on when he comes up. If he's up like May 1st, I think a low 100s bid makes sense. You could really get an easy double-double. I know the runs and ribbies will be light. But if I can get 15, 16 homers and steals, that's pretty hot off the wire.
And if you can stash right now, I think it's, yeah.
Because anywhere where you can stash, do that now.
He's going to have like 550 plate appearances. And
yep.
How many guys just available right now, even in some 12-team leagues, are going to have 550 plate appearances?
Not a ton. And the ones that are hard to find, fine, because that's why you're burning.
Or they're empty, like, right? It's like,
yes, exactly.
You know, like, you might be able to find a guy like, oh, in a full season might hit like 8 home runs and steal 8 bases, but like,
just Tommy Pham could be 2020. He really could. Yeah, 2020 is like the definite upside. I'm like scraping off that month. That's why I've been saying those teens numbers, but he's going to be good. I think he always is. Tommy Pham is always good. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't still be. Let's jump out to Baltimore. This guy could get 550 plate appearances, and he's now rostered in tons of places. I hope it's damn near 100%, even in the shallower formats. Oh, my God. I don't know when they update this. There's no way it's still just 52% for Colton Cowser. So this must not be updated yet for Fantasy Pros. I don't know when they do their update. Obviously, 100% rostered.
I mean, I work for Fantasy Pros, so I could probably ask.
Yeah, just see, like, do they do, like, a Monday night up? Like, when is the update for that? Because it can't still be
50. He's 77% rostered in Yahoo.
Okay, that's what I was going to check. So you check that. I can check ESPN real quick, unless you're already doing
it. I'm checking right now, so.
Okay. Because, yeah, there's just no way.
He's only 40% rostered in ESPN.
Even with what's it called? 3 outfielders and all that. That's no, yeah. No, that's nuts. So then how much did you say at Yahoo?
77.
So that almost checks out then.
Yeah.
Like if you just do the times plus, you know, add them divided by 2, that's like average, 59. Yeah. And it says 52 here. So it might not even move up that much. That's crazy. I'm not just talking because of the hot week. This is a premium prospect who has power and speed. He's taken over at least the front side. Now, I will say one thing about a 10-teamer, 3 outfielder. If you don't think he's going to play against lefties, I get it a little bit. It's a platoon bat, right? Platoon bats are hard to roster. Now, I'd be going out and getting Cowser. I love Cowser. I love Cowser and Kierstead. I did take Kierstead in some leagues over Cowser. I was kind of choosing between the two, and I this was before spring started. I went the Kierstead route, who I also think is a beast. But Cowser had the week from heaven. He absolutely popped off. He even played against the lefty on Saturday, which was great. He's the dude right now in left field. What do you expect going forward? Obviously, after one of these hot weeks, the question is, okay, what are we getting now? You might have missed some of that. You might have missed all of it, depending on what your pickups are. But where do we go from here with a Colton Cowser? As a premium prospect who's now won himself a job 2 weeks in, what's next?
All right, you ready for a not that bold prediction? But yes. It's going to sound bold.
Okay.
Colton Cowser leads the Orioles outfield and plate appearances rest of the way.
Okay, that is pretty bold.
Is it? Okay.
I like that. No, I think that is taking.
I think if anybody platoons, I think it might be Cedric Mullins.
I think so too.
And as much as I love Andy Santander, like he's defensive liability, like clearly prioritizing defense a little bit. Santander will come out of games at times because he is a defensive replacement.
Yep. Lose that last plate appearance.
I think Cowser, like, he's so good defensively. Like when you said, like he played against the lefty, that's because Cedric Mullins sat against the lefty and Cowser went to center field. So
that defense is the underrated aspect for Cowser. By the way, the Milkman nickname is awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed that it took me a second to get. I had to hear it like a third time for I'm like, oh yeah, Cowser. I was like, why milk? I don't know. I don't get it. But I'm a moron. So I did eventually get there. But I love Cowser, man. He's awesome. That defense really helps. I will say this, since we kind of I don't want to say we dogged out your boy, said, but we did say, hey, he needs to be looking over his shoulder.
We didn't say that.
I said that.
Let's be honest here. Yeah.
I said that.
I mean, he's got a 137 WRC plus.
He also enjoyed a week from heaven. 12-12 OPS, homer and a steal. He was great.
I think Austin Hayes is cooked.
Oh, he's in deep shit. Here's the thing. They could do another trade like the Burns deal that barely impacts them, where they give away two legitimate players for a pitcher, and they barely feel the impact, even though the team that gets Austin Hayes and Kyle Stowers or Austin Hayes and Kobe Mayo, depending on how good the pitcher is, they're ecstatic. But the Orioles are like, yeah, we don't care. We got six more guys that look just like that are going to they're gonna pop in.
Yeah, I mean, Keston Hurst.
Oh, there's another one for you. Keston Hurst. You're changing his name even.
Yeah, like this is a great day. So, I mean, like they could trade Connor Norby. Trade any. Like the crazy part is, like if they decide to just roll with what they have, like at some point, like this lineup's just going to be unreal good without even having to make a move. Like
it's, they are so silly, dude. It's ridiculous. Cause the next guy we're going to talk about is Jordan Westberg. So you say Kyle's are going to have the most plate appearances in the outfield, which means he's not even going to be in a straight platoon. And by the way, I'll backtrack a little bit on what I said earlier. I was justifying the ESPN low roster rate of like, okay, three outfielder, one util. If he platoons a little bit, you got to at least get him right now. He needs to at least be like 70% at ESPN. And then if he turns out to be a platoon, you can reassess from there. But I think this isn't just a hot week. I think Kowser is a real deal stud, not at this level. Nobody's this
good. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to and I don't even think like he's like a 280 hitter. Like, I mean, I think he's probably like a, honestly, he's going to be very Anthony Santander-ish with more speed, I think.
Like, with more speed. He can run.
Yeah. Like he's a 260 probably kind of hitter who can pop 25 plus homers, throw in some stolen bases, but is a really, really good defender.
Yep.
And so I think even if he struggles, and there will be struggles, I mean, he's got like a 13% swinging strike rate, his 81% zone contact is below league average. Like there will be struggles, but I think the defense will carry him through.
Next up though on Kowser, before we get to Westberg, would you try to sell high?
Depends on what I could get. I just spent $269 on him in a $1,500 auction. So
yeah, you went in.
Yeah.
And he was only available in four main events, which is a 15 team mixer. And they were all tight bids, 300 something versus 300 something in all four. That was super impressive. I couldn't believe that when I saw that the winning average was 363. The runner up average was 343. The biggest split between them was only $33. So, you know, those four leagues were really tight on Colton Kowser. Now, if you're talking about selling high, classic sell high buy low would be to try to take the plunge on an Aaron Nola. And I know the skills look rough. The velo's down. It's a 3% strikeout minus walk. It's as ugly as it can get. It's a buy low. In a shallower league, let's say a 10 or 12, is that something that you would do, Kowser for Nola?
Can I answer tomorrow after I see a pitch against the Rockies?
I mean, sure. Honestly, we could revisit. What about like a Max Fried, who's also looked pretty ugly so far? 9% strikeout minus walk. Velo isn't down.
I'm so afraid of Fried. I mean,
okay. So you're worried about injury with him?
Yeah.
Okay, what about
Nola? I mean, I guess I'm worried with injury with Nola too, right? Like, Nola's had injuries in the past. And the two mile velo dip. That's indicative of something being wrong. So I don't know that I would. You probably should. And maybe this is like, I was big on Kowser coming in.
Yeah.
And I want him to be as good as I think he can be. You probably should. But
Joe Musgrove. Strikeouts are down. Velo's down.
It scares me too because of the injury last year.
I know because I'm trying to find the real buy lows here because like, I'm not going to say Luis Castillo. You're not getting Luis Castillo. I know he's 0-4 with a 582.
I would do that in a heartbeat.
In a millisecond.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find somebody. The real scary ones are the ones that like are they actually hurt and that like
yeah.
So no, you don't want to buy those. I do understand that.
Let me run over to the player rater real quick. I'll sort by ADP and see who's got some like low numbers.
Who might we be able to get for Colton
Kowser? Rafael Devers.
If I could get that, I would do that.
I mean, you're doing that RV, right? So I'm starting way too. Bo Bichette?
Again, if you can, I think you must. You must.
Ooh, Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love Couser. I was also in on him.
Nico Horner.
If you didn't say that one, I was going to say, let me jump in with one. Shit, man. I bought in on him this year. So far, so shitty. He's better than this. Like, there's just no way he isn't. I'm not breaking news when I say that. 187 average. It's a 216 BABIP. It seems to be as plain as BABIP being down is killing Horner right now. 16% walk rate, more than double last year, and only a 2-point jump in strikeout rate up to 14% for Horner. I think I would. Especially if I needed speed. This is a true buy low. It's ugly. There is nothing here that's going to get you excited except for the walk rate jump. I would go and get Nico Horner for Colton Couser.
Yeah.
In a 10 or 12.
I definitely have a little bit of concern on Horner.
Understandably.
The zone contact is way down. I mean, it's still above league average.
But he's starting from the moon. I mean, he's usually way at the top.
So, but I think he's going to be fine. Like, I don't think there's that much to worry about. What about Gleyber Torres?
Yeah, I go Glabes.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. So at least see what's up. You know, maybe these people laugh in your face a little bit. Say, nah, I'm not going to buy the hot hand for my struggling stud. But some of these will get done.
Yeah, and, like, could you get Alex Bregman right now? Because I think so.
That. Yeah, like, I would do that too. Mm-hmm. Because the thing with Couser is he's not Oliver Dunn hot. And I'm not saying that to roast anybody who picked up Oliver Dunn. I picked him up. Like, you know, but we knew that he was a hot hand that we're trying to see if we can kind of milk another couple weeks out of it. But he had 36% K rate, 5% walk. Colton Couser is a premium prospect who, like Justin said, has excellent defense, which is going to keep him in the lineup on a great team. So
we also want to acknowledge that there is downside, right? Like, I do think that he is going to be really good. I think his defense helps him stay in the lineup. We were just talking about how good the AAA system is in Baltimore. And if he went through a month stretch where he just couldn't hit the freaking ball, he gets sent down. Like, I don't care how good his defense is. So, like, whereas, like, all these guys we're talking about for the Would You Rather, like, Bregman's going to play every day, no matter what. Torres is going to play every day, no matter what. Goldschmidt's going to play no matter, like, so, like, I totally understand, like, yeah, like, if I can make that move, like, I'm going to take the guaranteed production out of those guys. I'd rather just keep Couser, too, though. So, yeah, I'm not actively, but, like, if someone comes to me and goes, I really want Couser, like, shoot for the moon right now.
And if your outfield's hot and you need some infield, a lot of those guys that Justin said were infielders, and maybe that's a perfect fit for you to see if you can sell high on him. Hang on one second. Somebody just tweeted that I need to get the RotoWare shirt with the Bronx Barkers, the two wiener dogs. And I'm quite literally wearing it right now. So I need to respond that I have it and I'm wearing it because it's excellent. We went to a little kite festival in the park yesterday, Zilker Park. Tons of dogs there. And we must have seen 10 wiener dogs, and it was great because I was wearing this shirt. So I'm wearing the same shirt 2 days in a row. I'm disgusting. But, you know, I'd show them the shirt. That was like my license to pet their dog. I'm like, look, I love wiener dogs. You have to let me pet your dog, please. And thankfully, everyone was really nice, and they let me touch their wiener, which I appreciated. Anyway, moving on, Jordan Westberg, another Oriole cooking, doesn't have quite the acclaim of a Colton Couser. In fact, kind of gets overshadowed by the group. It doesn't have the acclaim of a Gunner, a Holiday, or Rutschman from a couple years ago. You know, almost is a little bit of an afterthought, which seems unfair for somebody with his potential talent. But what do we think of Jordan Westberg? He's been doing pretty well this year. 3 homers, 2 steals so far with a 149 WRC plus. Is Westberg a stud in the making?
I don't think so. I think... And this is not because, like, I have this belief coming into the season or, you know, previous to coming into the season and then coming into the season that Westberg is more of an accumulator, that he doesn't have a flashy tool for fantasy that can really drive him. He needs that full-time playing time. So, and I was worried about
getting that.
Yeah, he's getting it right now. I know he started out hot, and there are things where you look at the profile and you go, okay, hard hit percentage is up quite a bit. The barrel percentage is up quite a bit, but it's not like there's nothing like the max velocity is not up at all. You know, the contact rate's not up at all. Like, I think he is like this accumulator, but right now he's playing every day. So I think he should be rostered in definitely 15s and a lot of 12s. But like, I don't see like a star in the making at all here.
Okay. I think that's fair. Again, you know, Jordan Westbrook did not get a ton of acclaim coming up.
Yeah.
Wasn't, you know, like I said, close to an afterthought just because of how stacked this, this farm system is. So I get it, but yeah, I think that makes sense that he's kind of an accumulator type. I think he is better fit for the deeper leagues where you're just trying to pile on the plate appearances, maybe a hot hand type in the shallower formats that you can go out and get. He is, he's third baseman, right? Does he have second eligibility too, or is it just third?
I think he has
second and third.
Yeah, I think he might.
Yeah, second and third. 35% rostered at Fantasy Pros there, so the ESPN Yahoo.
I think the hard part becomes with Westbrook is, like, in a month, if they bring up Kobe Mayo, if they bring up Connor Norby, like, where is the playing time going to come from? You know, because right now Jackson Holiday's up, so now
does everyone take a hit then?
I think a lot of guys are going to take a hit for sure.
Just so they just have fresh guy in every day. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, even Holiday gets a day off a week just to facilitate even.
Calendar. I think this is one of the reasons why, like, I wasn't as like huge on Holiday from a redraft perspective is like, he's 20 years old and yes, the tools are really, really interesting, but like, this is a loaded team and they want to win. They just won 100 something games like in the division. Like, they want to win a World Series. Holiday's got a hit. Like,
yeah, for sure.
He hasn't so far. Like, he's got one hit. Like he could go back down to the minors, and I wouldn't be mad at the Orioles for that.
No, there is a world where if Holiday doesn't quite click, then yes, he would get sent back out. But for now, they're going to give him ample time to kind of figure out what's what. It's been four games. Let's not freak out. But Jordan Westbrook, I do think he's a deeper league type guy. Ride things while they're going hot right now, and we'll kind of assess him as the season goes on. You mentioned this guy earlier. A guy that we've liked in the past too, Michael Busch. You know, we're not alone on that train. A lot of fans out there in the fantasy world waiting for him to get his opportunity. It finally comes in the form of a Cubs trade, not a White Sox trade. That seems to work for both teams, right? Doesn't look like the Dodgers got much back. They got two young prospects, and they send Yency Almonte with Michael Busch here to the Cubs. And this is kind of like that Orioles phenomenon that I was talking about, where the Dodgers are unaffected by losing Busch. And yet the Cubs feel like, yes, we got one over. We stole Michael Busch, and dude is just blasting homers left and right. He's up to five now after four straight games with a homer. Is that right?
Yeah, four straight games with a homer, five on the year.
Strikeout rate at 25%, perfectly fine for a stud power hitter. 11% walk rate, 10% swinging strikes, so, you know, not up there flailing. 327, 393, 694, just a great slash. He's on fire, 26 years old. Are we getting the breakout here with Michael Busch?
Yep. And I am so disappointed in myself that I did not invest in him further.
Did you get him anywhere?
Yeah, DCs, I've got him in a few spots. Least? I've got him in a DC. I've got him in one of my auctions. I've got him in, I think, Tout Wars and Labor.
What slowed you from going all in?
There was so much Christopher Morel hype. I was worried about the playing time.
I thought I was going to get Mervis'd. I hit the brakes too. I thought we might get Mervis again, and I was nervous about Michael Busch.
And there was so much talk about how bad he was defensively that, like, I was just worried that he was going to end up, like, either as a bench bat or in the minor leagues. And I should have just...
Isn't he out of options?
He is.
No, he has two options. No, he's...
Oh, he's two good. Options. That's right. Yeah, so I'm disappointed in myself, but... I'm a big Michael Busch guy. Like, I really am. And I think this, like, everything under the hood says that this is legitimate. We're talking about a guy. And I think he could hit like 270, 280. Like, I think like, he's got 89% zone contact and he's swinging inside the zone over 70% of the time. So he's attacking the zone and he's not swinging outside the zone. 25% O swing is below league average. Like, he's doing everything you want him to do. It's an embarrassment of riches that the Dodgers have that they could just get rid of this guy.
And not even feel it. 33% at Fantasy Pros. So a lot of availability. Yeah. Now, one thing is, those leagues don't use CI.
I picked them up in a 12-team, in labor, which is a 12-team league this week. I got them for like $2. Like,
I'm with it.
I think right now, like, you should be running to the wire to pick up Michael Busch. Like, I just...
Yeah, because with that kind of power, that plays in all formats.
And the, like the combination of the power and the contact ability, to me, is unreal good. Like, I mean...
Yeah, because he might not be one of these power guys that only hits, you know...
And a double-digit walk rate. Like, it's he also has a good eye at the plate. Like, he's not up there just hacking at everything. Like, he's not swinging out the side of the zone. He's walking on top of short. Like, I think this is like a legit, really good hitter that as long as the defense doesn't become a problem, I think the defense is the only question mark, but as long as they're okay with the defense, and so far his defense, it's a little bit below league average, but not bad.
Nothing crazy. So, and they can hide him at first, right? They're not trying the second base experiment like LA was doing when you could do shifts. And that was the thing. Once they lost the shift ability, they're like, well, he's first base only, and we got a guy there. And so they can't put him at DH because they got a guy there. And so he just became expendable, Michael Busch did. They ended up selling him off for some prospects. Cubs say, heck yeah, we got our first baseman now of the future. I trust that you're not concerned about the rush of lefties coming this week. You're still going with Michael Busch, even though they face Miami, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll be interested to see what they do, you know, because they do have Garrett Cooper, who can be like a short side platoon.
I think Cooper comes in for Talkman and Busch keeps playing. Yeah, I agree. That's what I think should happen. Yeah. All right, a couple more guys here. Marcelo Ozuna's doing it again. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but I'll just give a standard caveat. We talk about how some people play where they don't want, asshole off-the-field guys on their teams. Totally respect that. Other people see them as number-generating entities, and they're not making moral judgments. In fantasy, you want to enjoy your team, and so if you want to root for your players and you don't want somebody like this, I totally get that. You can still win your league without getting Marcelo Ozuna. But if you bought back in, he's having another brilliant start after the huge campaign last year. He goes 4,100. He was util only, 33 years old, and a negative, personality outlook. I think all of that kept his price down. He has 7 homers and an 1,192 OPS so far. Is Marcelo Ozuna going to do it again as long as he stays healthy, which I know is a huge if, but is he going to blast another like 35 plus this year?
I think he is. He's, if you look at our player rater over on FanGraphs, I think he's the number 2 like hitter on the player rater right now. Like he's generated the
second behind only level. Mookie.
Yeah, like it's insane. Another one of these, like, why didn't I get more of him? And I know why, and like it still hasn't like borne out to be like a bad decision yet necessarily. But I was like, why spend the money on Marcelo Ozuna when I can get JD Martinez for cheaper?
And we'll still see what happens with
JD. Exactly. So it's still yet to be like, I may say like, hey, at the end of the day, like, you know, a $1 JD Martinez or $2 JD Martinez, you know, earn me, you know, $15, and I feel fine about that.
He was great last year. So once JD is healthy, we can assess that. And that was your take all season was, I'm not going to pay for Ozuna when I can get JD. And I totally get that. Like, I'm not afraid of you. But
this is the second time I've made this mistake in the last couple of years. Cause I think last year or the year before, I was all like, why pay for JD Martinez when I can get, Nelson Cruz, like, you know, later, like
Cruz flopped.
Like,
you just keep picking Cruz the wrong one.
I just, you know, like, I'm not afraid of picking UT only guys.
Me neither.
I'm also not afraid of picking bad people because, to be quite honest, there are a lot of them are bad and we just don't know about it yet.
That's true too. No, look, but listen, I don't judge anybody that plays that way.
I don't either.
You want to have fun. You want to get jerseys and root for your guys.
Our very good friend Ian Kahn, like, is like, hey, if you're a shit person, I'm not putting you on my team.
Yeah.
Because I want to be able to root for you, and I don't want to root for bad people. I don't have a problem with anybody who's like, I don't think it's a bad process at all. You want it's a game. You're trying to have fun, and if it's not fun for you to roster crappy people, then I absolutely get that. I don't care as much about that, unless I think there's a reason. Like, I would never roster Trevor Bauer, all the people who are like drafting Trevor Bauer this year. I was like, well, that's just a waste of pick because he's never going to fucking play in the majors again. Like, I just, you're never going to see me do that. Like, yeah.
It certainly doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. So, but like Marcell Ozuna, like, yeah, he's probably a, he's definitely, a, or he seems like a shit person. I don't really care. I just want the numbers from fantasy. And I think if he's somehow still available, I can't imagine he is in any format, but like he should be rostered in 100%
of leagues. 93%. Which means there's some availability. That should not be the case. Yeah. Even 10 teamer, shallow league, whatever you want.
I wonder
to say.
If there's leagues where like he's just not at, like they don't have a util spot.
Maybe.
And maybe, like he just yeah. he does not have a position to play.
If that's the case, that would make sense because yeah, I don't understand otherwise.
But then like Ohtani wouldn't be.
Yeah.
So you couldn't do
he's
that.
He's 92% at ESPN with DH. Yeah,
it's crazy.
So that's some leagues.
Dead leagues.
I mean, but he should have been drafted.
He's been the number two fantasy player.
Yeah, Ozuna should have been drafted. Unless, you know, I don't know. He should have been drafted. Let's pivot to somebody who a lot of fans do love. You got that nice smile. He does a little heart hands or whatever. Jeremy Peña, coming off a down season. You know, had the big hype 2022, including a big playoff. Oh, my goodness, this is the next great shortstop. Not so much. Limps to a double-double. You know, kind of boringly whatever. Did play every day. 634 plate appearances last year. 10 homers, 13 steals with a .263 average. Didn't kill you. You did not lose your season, even if you overpaid for Peña. If someone gives you 634 plate appearances of basically league average work with a double-double, they are not why you lost. But it was still underwhelming. So the price comes down this year. And now, is he bouncing back a little bit? Coming up with some of that breakout potential that people saw in 2023? Or is this just a hot run for Jeremy Peña with two homers, two steals, .348 average, and an .855 OPS? Where do you stand on Peña right now?
I am intrigued. Okay. He's making elite zone contact. And I mean, like 95%. K-rate
down big time.
Yeah, like 95% zone contact right now and swinging a lot inside the zone. The Z swing is over 72% right now. He's not barreling the ball a ton. And I mean, he is running like a .375 BABIP right now, but again, one of the reasons I like Nico Horner and one of the kind of reoccurring lines that I said with guys like Nico Horner is guys who put the ball in play a ton. Make a lot of zone contact, give themselves the opportunity to get lucky. Mm-hmm. And so we shouldn't dismiss those guys as, oh, well, he just got lucky because they're giving themselves the opportunity. Yeah, they're making that a possibility. Guys like Javi Baez who don't make a lot of contact in the zone, don't give himself the opportunity to get lucky. And this is why he's fallen off. So
cut to a shot of Javi Baez. What the fuck did I do?
Yeah, screw you guys. You did send me the video of the dude listening to us talk about Javi Baez signing
versus Corey Seager,
and me saying I would much rather I'd much rather have Javi Baez. I stand by the process. I mean, it was a lot to do with health.
I know, and that's always been your thing with Seager, which is not a terrible thing, by the way. I want to be clear. As much as I've given you hell on your Seager takes, it's not like being afraid of his health is incorrect. It's just that he does so much when healthy that it almost doesn't matter. He kind of outruns his consistent injuries.
And even if Corey Seager gets hit by a bus tomorrow,
like, he's still gonna out-earn.
He's probably still out-earned. Yeah, by his terms of the contract.
That was a bad deal when we signed it. Jeremy Peña. So because he's high contact, you're kind of thinking maybe there could be something else here.
I think it's something to ride right now. Like I don't. Mm-hmm. He's not going to keep that up. Like and I haven't done like a swing breakdown to go, okay, like he's doing this, but he has been an above average, you know, zone contact guy in the past, not to this level, but like, even if when it does come down as it will, like he could still like, I think he could still be a really valuable accumulator.
Can he hit 280s this year? Jeremy Pena.
I think he can. And will he? I don't know. But
do you think he beats the double-double? It was 10-13 last year. Can he get more to like mid-teens? What do you think on the homer and steal output? Because I think the average is the real growth potential here. That he could add like 20 points of batting average, even if it is with 10-13. 283, 10-13 is still pretty hot.
Yeah, like I think he could be like a 280, 15, 13 kind of guy.
I'm with that.
I think it's fine. Like I think that
he was really 200.
Yeah, I think like last year the hype went too far.
Correct.
And then this year the hate went too far. And I think he's he is a valuable accumulator. Plays on a good team, you know, and. Because he is a good defender and he puts the ball in play, like I think he's gonna like accumulate, especially 15 team leagues. Like he's just gonna accumulate. Like in 12s, are gonna be weeks or months where like you're like, oh, like I'd rather have a guy who just like swings for the fences and gets.
You might want to chase something. Yeah,
yeah, because there are gonna be months where he has 3 home runs. Like
totally.
You know, and so and you're just gonna sit that and go,
home runs, one steal, hitting 262, and you're just like, ugh, what did I get in a 10 or 12 teamer?
So, like, he's not a guy, like, I'm rushing to the waiver wire for, but I'm sure you have guys on your team right now that, like, are hitting 211, and you'd probably rather, you know, have the, you know, paltry homers and stolen bases, but at least not be killing your batting average right now.
And everyday PT for Jeremy Pena, like you said, plays a slick short. Good player, still just 25 or 26. So not like a huge growth profile at that age. You're starting to kind of be who you are. But if he took a step forward, and like you said, those numbers you gave him would be a step in the homers and the steals. That would be pretty nice. So I like him. Curious to see what happens with him. He's a player I kind of root for, but don't really have in fantasy anywhere this year. Because honestly, the guy that made me pivot off of him was to wait for Jackson Merrill. And I obviously do not regret that early on.
Yeah.
So he was going about 50 picks later. All right. So just some early breakthrough brats. And I kind of wanted to see where you were at with them. On Thursday, we will get into some other stuff. I'm not exactly sure what the topic will be. We got 3 days of games to that point. But anyway, Justin, enjoy the rest of your day. Jackie Robinson Day. Always a cool
there
day.
You go.
Seeing all the 42s and Jackie Robinson stories never get old for me, by the way. I feel like I learn something new about him every year. We do a lot of fun stuff with him in Out of the Park Baseball, which I don't know if there's any Out of the Park fans that listen to the podcast too, but if you are, you're getting a little scoop here. We're doing something special with him this week, which is not a huge scoop because we kind of always do around Jackie Robinson week, but it's different than normal PT fans. So anyway, Justin, great talking with you. I will talk to you on Thursday. And by the way, I know you didn't do your chat today. Are you going to make it up or just let it go till next week?
We shall see.
Okay, no problem. Just want, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, just letting people know.
I might try to make it up on Thursday if I can.
Okay.
It just depends on how my kids being out of school for a random 4-day weekend just screwed me. Plus,
no worries at all. Yeah, and get your taxes done, folks. All right, Justin, we will talk on Thursday. Take care.
Take it easy.